Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Lab Automation's Next Generation, Achieving ROI, Boosting Staff Morale, Slashing TAT, and Adding Value to Physicians and Patients. The presenter is Jessica Isaac, MHA, MLSCM, Executive Director Pathology Laboratory, IU Health, Indianapolis, Indiana.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. I know you have choices and appreciate your interest in this presentation today. I don't know about you, but I've heard so much about FDA, AI, and LDT. I'm excited to talk about something different. This is a lot of ways, I think, a fun presentation just to talk about some successes, honestly, not to give it a spoiler alert, but diving into how IU Health is using automation and specifically our next generation of automation that's been coming out to improve our laboratory services. So Indiana University Health, they've added animations. Indiana University Health, it's right in central Indiana. We are the largest healthcare provider in the state of Indiana. And this shows you just kind of all those little symbols on the map. There are locations where we have hospitals, some of our associations with the campuses around IU as well. We are one of Indiana's largest employers and the number one destination for healthcare in Indiana. So we have over 2.5 million outpatient visits a year, over 100,000 admissions. We're nationally ranked in 10 pediatric subspecialties at Riley Hospital, which is in downtown Indianapolis. We have over 38,000 team members across the entire system, 1.5 million or billion in community investments annually and magnets. A lot of great things are going on at IU Health. And we have a very strong partnership with Indiana University and the School of Medicine in particular. So sitting in downtown Indianapolis is the IU Health Pathology Laboratory. So we have around the state about 1,100, over 1,100 team members in the laboratory. We have over 40 outpatient service centers and a little over 100 medical faculty. That includes our pathologists, PAs, some of our assistants, and faculty. We perform over 24 million billed tests a year. We have an extensive growing outreach program that we're very proud of and really trying to stretch across more of Indiana. We have 5 hub hospitals. We really have a hub-and-spoke model. And 10 critical access hospitals. So specimens flow from the critical access to the hub to our downtown location that's pictured here. This just shows a little bit of our geography for some of the locations I'm going to talk about today. So we have divided our health system into regions. So we have our west region here, and our NET is the hub in our west central region. East Central region here with Ball Memorial Hospital being our hub. And then we have a central kind of Indiana suburban region where West Hospital is located in what we consider Indiana suburban. And then down south here we have our South Central region with Bloomington being the hub there. Our Indianapolis campus is right in the middle, and kind of underneath that star is another hospital I'm going to talk about a little bit later. It's IU Health's flagship hospital of IU Health Methodist, and that's our big level one trauma center that's in downtown Indianapolis. So we're going to try to address why you would choose next generation or why choose automation at all. Something I think everyone's really aware of is just how business is changing in the laboratories. We've had very high patient census in the hospital, and year over year, our test volumes have been increasing pretty dramatically. Our financial pressures have been equally difficult. So 2 years ago, during budget season, we were met with a request to cut $10 million out of our budget. And we operate pretty lean operations, so coming up with $10 million in pure expense reduction, don't factor in any revenue, only give me expense reduction, is a really difficult test. Cost per test, all of these hospitals around the system that our consolidated laboratory is serving, they only care about what our cost per test is. They don't really look at our revenue. We've struggled with that to try to make them see, you know, what our revenue, if we increase testing, you get this much more revenue. They only really care about that cost per test. So we try to do everything we can to lower the cost per test. And then staffing challenges. Base salaries and starting wages are all going up. We have a lot of wage compression because of that. We can't move people that are already here as much as we're moving that starting rate to try and get people through the door. And then the actual pool of applicants is a lot smaller. So I know this is a story you probably are all very familiar with. And to dive in a little bit more to just the people challenges at IU Health in particular, we have a very aging and strained team. The average age of our laboratorians are about 41 years old. 8% are over 65. So that's about 90 of our team members are past a traditional retirement age. We average about 32 FTEs of overtime per pay period right now, and an additional 30 of contract labor. So we're paying enormous wages right now in contract and premium pay. Our vacancy rate today sits at about 9.38%, so about 100 positions that are open. It takes about 41 days to fill on average. I actually think it's a little higher than this. I think that's a fudged number a little bit. And then 125 open requisitions. Some of that, even though we have only about 100 true openings, some of them are posted as, hey, we'll take an MLT, we'll take an MLS, we'll take whoever wants to work here. And then 14 of our recs are over 120 days old. We'd probably have a lot more, but after so long, we take them down and try to start over so that maybe we can get some applicants. But you can see the trend over the last, from January 23 on, it's been up and down. There's a little bit of a dip leading into the holiday, but I think that's just because people tend to hold on to their jobs a little bit leading into Christmas. So trying to contend with all of this in a really difficult financial market is a lot. So what can we consider when we're trying to cut costs or when we're trying to provide better service? You can manage your demand or your volume of testing, or you can improve your supply or your capability. So if you manage your demand, you can simplify your menu, you can send things out, and do less testing on site, which will probably mean that you need less staff, because you're not doing as much on site, but you're going to have a higher cost for those send out tests than if you do them yourself. The turnaround times are slower, and you have your quality's in someone else's hands. It's not in your own. And your experience with your customer, your physicians, are not going to be happy with this. They don't have anywhere near the same kind of service or responsiveness when you start sending everything out. So when you start reducing your staff and try to run on, you know, your skeleton staffs, you get coverage issues. One person leaves, and now I need a temp because I can't even make things meet anymore. And then your stat workflow process just gets demolished. So if you improve your supply or improve your abilities, you can actually shorten your turnaround time. You can do a higher throughput, so have more of a dedicated stat workflow. You can reduce your errors, 60 hours in pre-analytical work. I mean, we have 75% of our errors happening in this pre-analytical work, so you can try to make things that are going to make that better, and you can enhance your productivity and your team engagement. So obviously our improving supply is automating. So if you look at automation solutions that are on the market today, why do people seek automation? They want to improve their turnaround times, reduce their errors, standardize their processes, and improve productivity. So really simple sounding things, but it can be really difficult when you're just trying to improve your processes. So no matter what kind of continuous improvement process that you have, you can only get so good. There's only so much that you can do. And automation, so here we have a DXA. We are a Beckman partner at IU Health. The DXA gives StatTubes continuous priority. So from the time it's scanned in, it goes into the centrifuge first. It will come out first. It goes to the instruments that it needs to go to first. So it's continuously putting your stat testing first. And we can get down to a 4-minute centrifuge time. So we do this today. We went from, so at our pathology laboratory, we have an older generation of automation, the Power Express. And we have a 7-minute spin time on our chemistry line and a 13-minute centrifuge time on our heme line, where our coags are automated. So we are down to a 4-minute centrifuge with our DXA. It reduces a lot of those errors and standardizes processes that it typically have to be done by processing. So reading your barcode, measuring, is there enough sample in there? Is this the right tube color? Is this a BMP that's on a lavender tube? It'll catch those kinds of mistakes for you. So a lot of this pre-analytical work that you have to rely on lab assistants or whoever you have in your location doing that work is now out of their hands. All they have to do, you just need somebody loading the instrument. Take them out of the tube station, put them in the carriers, load them on your inlet. And then obviously it's going to improve your productivity. You're going to be able to handle more specimens with less or the same FTE. I would say it's only going to be the same if your volume goes up dramatically through this, because you're improving your capacity to do work. In all of our examples, we've improved our FTE. So this is just some, honestly, one of Beckman's pieces that they put out about their DXA fit. This is a little bit of a smaller version of the DXA. It doesn't have the storage unit for automated storage, but we have the regular versions in our lab. But the pre-analytical errors and the post-analytical steps, where just a lot of your 75% of your errors occur, are all automated using this. I mean, it's really as simple as loading your specimen. It centrifuges. It goes wherever it needs to go for testing, and then we'll go either to a programmed spot on your output, because maybe you're going to send it to your send-outs lab or wherever its next location will be, or it'll go into your storage unit. So I love this. One of my favorite things about automation is just the add-on process. So if you add on a specimen or a test to a specimen that's already gone through, it will... The middleware is constantly checking for anything that has something incomplete. And at the second that it finds it, it pulls it back out and sends it straight to the analyzer to be completed. So a lot easier. We actually have a customer service team that handles our add-ons remotely. So there's nobody even in our location. If for some reason they have to manually get it, they can go in, tag the sample, and we have a process. There's like a special printer where we send those labels for somebody who might need to retrieve a specimen manually. But hugely, we've automated that workflow process. So I want to talk a little bit about how we built our business case for automation. I would start with we used our vendor partner. We said, you've done this a lot. Where do you see success in business cases? We started with a very simple model, and we have to manage stakeholders throughout the process. And this is interesting when your stakeholders change hands, and the people that you convinced to give you the money to automate your lab, leave or move on to greener pastures, and you have to convince the next person all over again. And that happened to me 4 times with one of these. No lie. So it's really fun. But you really learn how to make a strong story. So 3 hospitals that were candidates within IU Health that we talked about earlier, Arnett. They have about 130 beds, 850,000 billable tests annually, and we're running at 40 FTEs. So this billable test number is that's not a blown out number where it's just per test. It's actually like one test would be a comp panel here. So the number looks maybe a little falsely low compared to what it actually is. And if you look at it as a test by test basis. And then Ball Memorial has 230 beds. And only does a little bit more testing, 860,000 tests, but they are running closer to 50 FTEs. And then we have IU Health West in our Indy suburban region. This is the closest to our downtown hospital. They have about 175 beds. They do 470,000 tests annually and have 25 FTEs. So these are kind of mid-sized hospitals for us, either a hub hospital or close to it. Where they are doing a lot more work because of our outreach. They do a lot more than they used to, but nowhere near what's happening downtown. So to compare that a little bit, you can see here our central core automated laboratory. We do about 3.8 million tests. This is actually closer to 20 million, or was it? It's like 18 million, 18 to 20 million if you don't consolidate all of the panel testing. We used 79 FTEs, and our productivity is 0.04. So productivity for us is paid hour per billed test. In our net, you can see what their current productivity is at, 0.1, Ball 0.12, and West is 0.11. So to move the needle on these, I could probably add 20 FTEs and barely move the needle on my central core productivity because we have so much volume that runs through there. So just the denominator is too large. But these ones, it's quite a bit smaller, and there's some room to move this pretty significantly. So one of the first questions we kind of asked ourselves is, can we start to approach this level of productivity in the core, or, you know, in one of these mid-sized labs? We partnered with AMS to benchmark our productivity in like size and other laboratories that do similar work. So that's, you know, really their business is to benchmark. And all of these are actually in a target range. So they were all non-automated within the target for AMS's benchmarked productivity. So when I tell you we've done all the continuous lean improvement, we've worked on this for years, there's just not a lot to trim and not a lot of ways that we can be more productive than we're being. So we start with an initial investment analysis. And I looked at these two just for comparison. This is Arnett and this is Ball. And this is approaching it really just from a potential FTE savings. So at Ball, how many med techs and processors are working, or I mean at Arnett rather, are working in the testing area? So we took all of our phlebotomy out of this analysis. We know we have to have phlebotomists in our draw centers in those locations, and really just looked at testing personnel. And then this is the very kind of subjective part. So future state automation, what does this look like? And what does the rate look like? Because today they make this, but we know this is increasing exponentially, how much money people are making in the lab. Well, at least we hope that they're increasing exponentially. But this is, like I said, it's very subjective. And you will not be accurate on your own. I don't think it's possible. So we really relied again here on our vendor partner to tell us what was possible. I know Beckman provided me with ROI analysis of what they have seen or what they believe is possible through automation, based on the current state of our laboratory. We also talk to our friends. We're part of the Compass Group. We check with other people, try to see what their productivity looks like, how many FTEs they have in their areas. So if you have similar sized health, you know, that are laboratories or health systems that are automated, you can talk to them and see what they were able to achieve. But I think it's important to understand what their productivity is. So if you can do a true apple to apple and look at that paid hour per build test, you can really compare what theirs is like compared to yours. So at our net, we guessed, you know, educated guessed, that we would save about 2.9 FTEs annually. We did the same kind of analysis at Ball Memorial, and here we had a little bit more of our MLS processors, our MLS team members and our processors working. They get a lot more outpatient work at Ball Memorial. So a lot more things that are coming in through a courier system from the region than we do at our net. So all of that, they had to have hands to handle that additional work. So we estimated with automation at Ball, we could take all of that, you know, manual processing of all of this work that's coming in and cut a lot more FTEs. So at Ball, we estimated that we would cut about 10.1 FTEs out of their budget annually. So if you look at a payback period, it was going to take probably six years to pay back and automate the expense of an automation, a small automation line at Arnett, and less than four to pay it back at Ball Memorial. So for IU Health standards, this makes sense and this one doesn't. So we decided to move forward with automation at Ball, and we're able to justify largely based on just this change alone. But there are other factors to consider that you can definitely put in your business case. Customer experience, so consistent, reliable turnaround time. You know who's going to answer the phone when you call us. We're going to take care of our customers, and this just kind of really helps us have consistent results. You know what you're going to get when you send your specimen to our lab. It improves retention because your team will love it, and they will love having this extra kind of set of, you know, I don't know, it's more than another set of hands. It's like tentacles to do all of this work for you that you used to have to do manually. Your productivity will improve, which means your cost per test is going to improve. You can look at this from your salary, wage, benefit per test. That should improve pretty dramatically, but you can also improve your operational, just your kind of supply expense and things per test as well. And then your error reduction. So this has a big impact on patients and your team member time. I don't know how many people that you have in your lab running down mistakes, or trying to just fix things after we mess it up. We had quite a few. I have one person doing this right now. I mean, she's pretty efficient, but it wouldn't be possible if we hadn't lowered down our mistakes. So when you look at all of these things, look at the FTE reduction and the savings there, you can really decide what the right thing to for your health, you know, is this the right thing to do for your health system? So I'm going to look at Ball, and I'm installing our Beckman Coulter Core Lab automation. So October 2022, we started install of the DXA. We already had Beckman equipment. We did add a couple additional instruments to go with our design for the line. But basically, we were automating all of these processes. So we had processing, IA, chemistry, hematology, coagulation, and storage, all on our automation line, and it's a traditional DXA. We started installing in October 2022, and we finished the install in December 2022. So leading up to the automation equipment being delivered, we moved everything into their final home. So Beckman comes in, you know, we mapped out what this is going to look like in our space, and had everything in its kind of final home, and then the automation line is brought in and built around it. So the go live is actually very quick. We went live in December of 2022. There's not a lot of work at that point. It's just hooking everything up, doing some IS testing, and for us, doing a platelet pore validation for our COAGs. We have to know that when it gets to the COAG instrument, we're going to have what we need. This is a picture of Ball Memorial Hospital Lab. So we have, you can see it kind of is almost like a square shape. And then the fun part. So in 2022, we had about 50 FTEs. In 24, our most recent, I think this is actually year to date, we've saved 8 FTEs in Ball's lab. Our test has actually gone up dramatically. Told you our outreach program is growing. So almost all of this is truly, there's a little bit of inpatient, but most of this is outreach volume. Our ED turnaround time, we target at least 92% completed within 45 minutes. They went from 90.5% to 94.3% completed within 45 minutes. Our productivity went from 0.12 to 0.02. They're more productive than our core lab that runs millions of tests a year. The engagement of the team, we use Gallup, went from 2.96 to 3.4. So the team loves it. It has made a huge difference in the consistency of our results and what we're able to deliver. So if you recall, we theorized that we would save 10.1 FTEs. So we're saving 8.2, but we're also doing 13% more volume. So it's kind of a trade-off. There's still some things we have to package things to send it from Ball downtown, our send out testing, things that aren't done. A lot of that outreach work is esoteric work that's not done on site. But you can still process through it. You can still process and send it downtown in a much easier way than you used to. So the second lab I want to talk about is IU Health Methodist Lab. So you did not see this in the analysis and kind of comparison until now because it was a really different scenario. So IU Health is building a $4.5 billion hospital in downtown Indianapolis. It will be replacing Methodist Hospital, and it's going to open at the end of 2027. We used to be connected to Methodist Hospital. It's probably half a mile or so from our consolidated laboratory via a pneumatic tube station, a system. So we ran along a people mover track to the hospital. The only lab services that we had on site was an acute care lab in the ED. They were very adamant that they needed their own services in the ER because they're very special and they need to be very fast. So we had those services there. They came to us and they said, hey, in June of next year, you're not going to have a pneumatic tube system. So this is about in June of 22. They came and said, June 1st, 2023, you don't have a pneumatic tube system anymore. So we're going to need you to put a lab in Methodist. And I went, you know what? Because it's our biggest hospital that we have. And immediately went to the drawing board to see what would I need to do. Obviously, I have to duplicate a bunch of services I have in my consolidated lab. But, you know, at this point in our consolidated lab, we're staffed to equipment more than tests. Like, I kind of need those people there just for maintenance and managing day-to-day. So I didn't think I was going to see hardly any savings in my consolidated lab from this change. But I knew that for the next 4 years, we had to be able to provide a really high level of service to our level one trauma center. You know, they do transplant care here. They do just the highest acuity care that we have in the entire state. So this was a big undertaking. So we designed this lab space at lightning speed and designed it with a DXA and sold what we estimated the FTE would be and then also sold that we would be maintaining what their current service is. You know, our goal was to at least maintain their current services. It was a tough sell. And then the person we sold it to left. and we had to sell it again. And then we started demolition of the space where we were going to put the lab in November of 22. So we have a go live set for, you know, June of the next year, and it's November and we're only doing demo. And suddenly I hear the construction crews have been pulled out and the COO of the hospital wants us to explain why we need this real expensive lab in our hospital. And I said, oh my God, you know, so I was losing it. But it was a really hard time. So we went back, we justified it again. In this conversation, the COO says to me, I know you're trying to, you know, you want your Cadillac in the lab, but do you really need this expensive equipment? And I said, a Cadillac? No, this is very basic, necessary equipment in a hospital laboratory. How do you expect me to hire 30 people, 30 FTEs worth of people to run this laboratory for you? I have to hire almost entirely, I had 10 FTEs in the acute care lab. So I was looking at hiring 20 additional FTEs to run this laboratory in less than a year and have them competent and ready to work there. It was almost impossible. I said, I don't think I can even do it. And I actually think we estimated we were going to need closer to 40 FTEs. So with automation, we said we would need 25. And I said, you know, 12, that's a number I can maybe get to, like 12 additional FTEs. And even that's going to be difficult. But the point here is the perception that people outside of the laboratory have of our toys. And she thought that I was just going all out and asking for the sun and the moon in putting automation in this laboratory at our level one trauma center that has millions of tests a year. And I said, I almost couldn't fathom that she thought that, but they do. They don't understand what we do very clearly. So we won that fight. We made, I made the case with her for the ROI and I mean, for the savings that we could, like the, it was made, oh, I'm sorry. We made the case based on really the inability to hire. It was, here's the state of the lab. Here are the open positions we have. Here's your ask. It's just not feasible. We won't be able to hire that many people. So we built the new lab. We have all the same things. It's very similar to Ball Memorial's automation line. Our DXA does all the processing, obviously, has IA, chemistry, hematology, CLAG, and storage on site. So this lab opened in June 26th of 2023, and it was hellacious, but we did it. It was really not fun. So here's the good part. I just wanted to see what the difference was for the ED. I'm not even going to get into the difference for the rest of the hospital. But the ED had a lab in the middle of the ED with a dedicated staff that did all of their testing. They were handed the specimens through a window and would immediately run these tests. So they had, you know, as the most white glove service probably of any ED that we had in the entire system. No other EDs had a lab on site. We missed, between January and June of 2023, we used a goal of 60 minutes. Okay, I don't even have 45 minutes here. 92% of tests completed in 60 minutes. No, we were only doing that less than 90% of the time. So we couldn't even get tests done in the ED where we have a lab in the middle of the ED. So that's over 7,000 specimens that missed their TAT goal prior to opening our new automated lab on the third floor of the hospital, you know, a far cry from where the ER is located. And then we went live in, so I'm going to call it July because it was the very end of June. And between July and the end of the year, when this lab was rough, it was in pretty serious, dire straits because all of the, you know, trying to hire people and train them went as badly as I thought it would. And it was really tough times. My director quit. She said, I'm out of here. I can't handle this anymore. Thanks a lot, Roche. No, I just, I mean, it was trying times. And we still got better. I'm no longer in the middle of the ED. I'm up on the third floor with a team that is falling apart, and I'm still doing better. So my stat testing for the ED went up to almost 92% being completed within an hour, and we only missed, you know, 5,700. So now we're a lot better. We're doing a lot better. The team is doing a lot better. Everybody's kind of happy, and they understand their equipment. They understand their processes. And now, year to date, we've only missed, only 1,500 tests have missed our goal. And we're meeting this goal, the 92%, in, this says 60, it's actually 45. We are at 96.69 within 45 minutes. So when you look at this little graph, this is day by day. It's a pretty kind of ugly calendar, but the dark blue line here is how many specimens missed the turnaround time goal, where the gray is the volume. So if you look at this kind of close, you try to put a line across this, what you'll see is our volume has gone up. This is a lull similar, like if this is actually a pattern here where it goes down. But if you compare our volumes, they are going, like our over a rolling 12, our volumes are going up, and we're doing better than we've ever done, and we're not in the middle of the ER, and they don't have white glove handoff, and all we did is put in automation. I mean, that's really what we did. So this is my director, who I love. I had to put her in here. This was the day we went live, and it was very, very stressful, and she was a huge part of it. The two of us just dedicated a year of our lives, basically, to making this lab, building this lab. But we learned a lot along the way. So every lab is different. Your results will vary. Some people may be, you know, really lean in testing staff, or they might be, it just depends. You know, I'm not going to speak for everybody's lab and can you save 10 FTEs? Can you save, you know, can you improve your turnaround time? I don't know what your processes are. I know what ours were, and I can tell you, even when we're standing over a centrifuge and trying to move it from there to the instrument and result it as quickly as possible, you can see we weren't doing that great of a job. What I will say is ADCAR. I told you when we went live in this lab, it was chaotic. It was actually really traumatic. and part of the problem is we didn't have buy-in from the team that we did have. So we had a lot of new people, and then we had people coming from this little ED lab where they were used to talking to their doctors. They were used to talking to the providers. If they thought something looked weird, they'd just walk over there. So they loved it, and they loved having that kind of line of sight to their patients and being part of the patient care team. They did not want to leave their lab. They didn't want to go upstairs to a new lab space. They were all very angry with us. And we didn't have time. We just were on such a time crunch. We did not have time to get their buy-in with the design. What do you think of this? Do you like this? Does it look good? No. It was like, hey, here's what it is. Take it or leave it. And they're like, you didn't put a sink where? You know, I mean, it was the biggest complaint that I had was the lockers. They all wanted their own individual locker. I said, I can't give you an individual locker. Like, there's not space. But we had to be very adaptable. Adaptable to the space that we were in, issues that came up during construction, team members leaving, team members coming, COOs deciding that we couldn't build our lab literally in the middle of demo. I mean, it was all really difficult. And you have to rely on your vendor where it makes sense. We couldn't have made the case that we made if we didn't make some jumps and some assumptions, and I think it's really difficult to do, and everybody wants proof that you're going to be able to do it, but in my mind, if you have a great partnership with your vendor, you can rely on them to give you some accurate information. They don't want you to promise something to your health system and fail. If you make promises and fail, you've lost the trust, and the odds are the next time you want to install another automation line, it's not going to happen. So if you want to keep selling automation lines, don't tell somebody a false story of what's possible with your automation line. And I would say have fun. It's very, I mean, this was an arduous journey for this lab. It's been a lot of work and consideration for Ball as well. We're now working to automate West Lab, so that's why I put it on here earlier, but I didn't have as much info yet because it's still kind of early stages, but West is our next approved check mark to put in automation, so we're really looking forward to what we can accomplish there as well. So anyway, this is it for me. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.